Alrighty, rocking and rolling, hour number two of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. Antonio Daniels is going to join us coming up at 5:20 p.m. Eastern Time, 2:20 p.m. Pacific. We'll chat it up with the voice of the Indiana Pacers and Mark Boyle coming up momentarily. As, man, what a last week or so that we've had of sports, whether you look at the Stanley Cup Final, that series tied up at one apiece, as you did get to see Brad Marchand get the game winner on Friday night in double overtime. So three overtimes in the first two games of the Stanley Cup Final. No, I did not misspeak on that one. In the NBA Finals, you had that epic Game 1 comeback by the Indiana Pacers, then followed up, which was a Game 2 dud overall, because I would have liked to have seen a close game. But the Oklahoma City Thunder, they do what they do best. And that's not only win, but they win by double digits, securing a 123-107 victory. And that was their 62nd. It's wild when you say that. 62nd double-digit victory of the season. I was at UFC 316 on Saturday night, as we just told you. And then the French Open, you did have Coco Gauff win. Sabalenka come off as a sore loser after the match with all the excuses. And she had to issue a statement on that. You know, it is what it is, and you keep it moving. And then you had the incredible comeback by Carlos Alcaraz, as he was as dead could be in a match. And not only did he come on back, but he comes on back and he wins the French Open there. So just what a wild stretch of sports. And it's always crazy this time of the year when you have the Stanley Cup Final and you also have the NBA Finals. But to see that stretch of what we got just from Wednesday, and you also factor in the tennis of it as well. Man, that is a phenomenal stretch of sports from Wednesday on. And we'll see what the Indiana Pacers will have when they go back home. This series now all tied at one apiece. And we now welcome in the voice of the Indiana Pacers. And that, of course, is Mark Boyle. Mark, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this. How you been?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. So the objective, obviously, was to go get one at Oklahoma City. The Pacers clearly do that after the thrilling game, after what we saw in game one. They unfortunately did not play well last night. What's kind of your feeling, what you saw from the Indiana Pacers in the first two games of the NBA Finals?
Well, I will make a slight correction there, because it's one of the things that distinguishes this team from some of the others I've been around. The goal was not to get one. The goal was to get two. Now, they got one, and they have home court advantage, so they accomplished something. But this team looks at things much differently than most any team I've ever been around. And the old cliche is, let's get one and then go from there. They went there determined to get two. That said, they didn't. Oh,
you got the cat in the background right there. Is it the good luck charm now for the Pacers?
Well, see, the cat doesn't like being in the background. That's why he's crying. The goal was to get two. They did get one. And the reality is now that it's a best of five and they have home court. So, objectively, they're better off than they were when the series started, and I would think that's a good thing.
What do you think that environment's going to be like when you next see them in action, NBA Finals game? We know the city's tradition with basketball when you get to see that get underway coming up on Wednesday night.
It'll be good. It'll be chaotic. It'll be loud. It'll be energetic. All of that. Like it is, I think, in most every arena when you get to a certain level of the playoffs. That said, Oklahoma City has an entirely distinctive presence. It's more like a college environment, starting with the fact that the fans don't sit until the Thunder score their first field goal. They're chanting the entire game. Now, we saw some of that in Game 6 of the New York series when the fans were literally standing the entire game. It's a distinctive home court advantage, but the Pacers have actually been just as good on the road as they have been at home. More or less. They've lost a couple of games both places, and they've done okay on the road too. But the home court is just an advantage, and how you quantify that, I don't know. But I can tell you this, it will be loud, it will be vibrant, and it's a definite advantage. We'll see if they can capitalize on that.
Yeah, and you look at Tyrese Halliburton, did not play well in game one, but he had the miraculous shot at the end, which is just starting to become the norm, obviously, with the Pacers. I love watching him play, and he's a top 10 player in the league. Last night wasn't at his best. We all seen the video coming off the podium of him limping. What can you tell us about the health of Tyrese Halliburton as we still have a few days to get ready for game number three?
Well, the next game is until Wednesday. They didn't seem real concerned about it afterwards. Now, that could just be the way they're positioning themselves, maybe he won't play at all. I'm theorizing to two different extremes. My guess is he'll be ready to go. But what they need from him, because let's face objective reality. Oklahoma City is the better team. Now, they're not so much better that they can't be beaten. Denver almost did it. The Pacers did it in game one. The Pacers have a chance to win this series, but I just don't see how they do it unless Halliburton plays at a high level every single game. You can break down stats any way you want. There's one that we had last night that they're undefeated in the playoffs when shooting 46% or better. They're winless in the playoffs when shooting 45% or worse. And there's a correlation there because when Halliburton is on his game, penetrating, creating chaos, hitting his own shots, then they generally shoot for a very high percentage. Before last night, they were shooting 50% from the floor and 40% from three-point range over the entire playoff run, and that's extraordinary.
Now, you get
if he comes and plays at a high level every night, they have a chance. If he doesn't, they don't.
Now, you get to paint the picture, obviously, on what Halliburton does when you're broadcasting the games on the Pacers radio network. How do you describe just what he's been able to do? I know last year they went to the conference finals. This year, though, those four miraculous shots, right? We've played all your calls going back on Friday after we got to put a bow on game one of the NBA finals. To see what this guy's really been able to do the last 2 years, how do you even describe it since you do get to do it basically on a night-in, night-out basis?
Well, you just try to focus on the play and describe the play with, at least this is how I do it, without trying to toss around stuff in your head. Oh, this is fantastic. How can I go way outside the bounds to describe how fantastic it is? I just try to stay in the moment and not get too extreme. That's also subjective. Maybe some people think it is too extreme. But I just try to describe the play and then contextualize it afterwards. And I know you've seen these numbers. We've all seen them. They've had one of these games in each series. And depending on which game you're talking about, they had a 1 in 1,012 chance to win or a 1 in 9,800 million gazillion chance. And the odds, as one of the graphics pointed out, to win all four in such a manner was 1 in 1.5 million. So you could say they're a team of destiny, or you could say they've used up all their luck. It's probably somewhere in between. And when you do finish like that, the thing to remember that people, I think, sometimes don't take into account, and this does not discredit what the Pacers have done. You need the other team to make mistakes also. In that Milwaukee win, Gary Trent just dropped a ball out of bounds with nobody around him. And there were things like that happening in all of those comebacks. It doesn't diminish what the Pacers have done. They still have to execute. And Halliburton in particular has been spectacular in those situations. But you do wonder, at least on some level, how long can that go on? And if you need that to continue, can you really hope to win the series?
Yeah, and going off of that, you know, because it's easy when I was at game one of the Eastern Conference Finals with 2:45 to go and the Knicks are up 14 to basically think to myself, okay, this game is over. I don't know if it's ever different for you when you're calling these games and you've seen so many crazy victories through the years. But when you look at the four ways that Halliburton's created these moments, did you even think through some of them that they were definitely over and that's what he made it even more stunning for you? Are you as stunned as we are when we were watching this stuff?
Well, in retrospect, I was stunned, but I try to stay in the moment to describe the single play in front of me. And unless there's a reason to contextualize it, I don't. The example you cite is perfect. Down 14 with whatever it was, two and change, you get a basket, it's down 12. I don't think about the rally beginning. They get another one, they're down 10 or 9 or whatever it is. I just try to call the plays, and then as the game gets further and further along, we do contextualize it. When they got to within a possession with less than a minute to go, then you do go back and say they were down 14 with 2 minutes to go or whatever the situation is. But I think if you start to think in terms of the big picture, when you're calling something in live action that you don't have a script for and you've got to make sure, especially on radio where there's no picture, that you have to get it accurate, there's always time to contextualize it after you describe the action, and that's how I try to do it.
Why I like this NBA Finals so much, Mark Boyle, is you look at the Pacers. I know they got off to a really bad start this season, but when they went up against the Cavs, many didn't think they would win. Many didn't think they were going to beat the Knicks. 2 months, right, ago, people said NBA players that Tyrese Haliburton was the most overrated player in the league, and now they've gotten a lot of respect. They've gotten a lot of credit. The Thunder, on the other hand, they've been the best team in the league throughout the entire year, and every segment I feel as if someone's trying to take away from the Thunder and tell me why they're not going to win the championship, and last night it was their 62nd victory of the season by double-digit points. Is there a little like mutual respect here from the Pacers organization and the Thunder organization? Obviously, we know both want to win a championship just because of the way, even if it's been different paths, that they've both been discredited at times this season.
That's an interesting question. I don't know the answer. On a big picture level, it's obvious that the organizations respect one another. But I don't know if that small market, nobody knows who we are, we don't get the credit we deserve aspect of it comes into play in terms of that respect. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But these two teams are really similar in the way they go about their business. They don't have a lot of the advantages that the major markets have. They built their team through drafts and trades. They don't lure significant free agents because in large part they can't. They do have disadvantages being in small markets. And so that may come into play in terms of how they view each other. I think that would be, though, a franchise vision rather than a team vision. The players and coaches themselves, I doubt, take that into account when they're trying to figure out how to beat each other.
You've seen a lot of basketball. When you get to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he won the MVP this year for a reason. He's three wins away from winning the championship and probably the finals MVP. I know he missed the shot in game one, but he's been really damn great in this series, and you saw it once again last night. How did the Pacers, I'm not saying you stop him, but how do they try to slow him down and maybe have him get an off night?
Well, the Pacers have gotten better defensively as the season has worn along, but I still think it would be a stretch to call them a good defensive team. They're competent, and they have their moments, and they do have some really good individual defenders like Andrew Nembhard, Aaron Nesmith, Ben Shepherd, Miles Turner's a good rim protector, and so on. But even in the earlier rounds, they didn't really stop Donovan Mitchell. They didn't really stop Jalen Brunson. They didn't really stop Antetokounmpo. They do try to make them work as hard as they can, though, to get their production, and they did that really well in Game 1. Gilgeous-Alexander got his, but he had to dominate the ball more than probably would be good for the Thunder. Remember, they had a season low in assists. And that last shot he did miss, but it was a contested shot and it wasn't easy. It wasn't like he blew an open five-footer. So they'll do what they can to make him work. They'll throw different looks at him from time to time. But the reality is they're a competent defensive team, not a great defensive team like the Thunder. And this guy is really good. He's going to get his. The only question is, how hard does he have to work to get it? And that's, I think, if you're the Pacers, the best you can hope for. And that doesn't put them on an island. For most teams, that's the best you can hope for with this guy. There's a reason he's the MVP. He led the league in scoring. He had more 30-point games than any other player. He had more 40-point games than any other player. He is really, really good. And while not literally unstoppable, you're just not going to shut him down.
He's the voice of the Pacers. We've been playing his calls all throughout the postseason. He's Mark Boyle. Mark, appreciate the time. Enjoy the Game 3 of the NBA Finals coming up on Wednesday night.
Hey, appreciate the invitation. Thank you.
You got it. There he is, Mark Boyle, joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Let's do this. We'll take a timeout, 14 after the hour. When we do come on back, it's time to update you on some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. And we got a lot cooking from the weekend that was. So we'll get to a news brief when we return after these short messages. So a few things before we get to a news brief. If you listen to the network for years, you know what Bob's Bar is. I was there yesterday. Phenomenal time meeting many listeners and seeing many listeners, and also some old colleagues and some current colleagues as well. And one of the colleagues that was there is our buddy Shep, David Shepherd, the good Shepherd, Mr. Basketball himself. And when I was talking to Shep, I think it was actually Shep who brought it up, and he said to me, you know, who do you think is going to be the next coach of the Knicks? And I said, I think it's still going to be Johnny Bryant, even though there's been some smoke with this Jason Kidd stuff. But those deals are very tough to still iron out and get done when you have a coach on another team. It's not impossible. We've seen Kidd get traded before, right, from the Nets to the Bucks. So it happens. But Shep goes, Mark Jackson. And I'm like, Shep, I go, I'm not saying it would be a bad hire, but it's not realistic. Mark Jackson last coached in 2014. He's never got a head coaching job since then. So when I hear Mark Jackson, I kind of just think Eric Bieniemy. right? For being an NFL guy first. Where for years he said, Bieniemy, 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 and he's never got a head coaching job. I don't think Mark Jackson's going to be coaching again, let alone being the coach of the Knicks. So I said, you know, when I hear Mark Jackson, kind of now reminds me of the same people that say, oh, Jeff Van Gundy. Right? Oh, Van Gundy, you know, used to be the coach of the Knicks, then left, then went to the Rockets. The guy hasn't been a head coach since 2007. You know, I know he's on the staff this past year with the Los Angeles Clippers, and ESPN just did a terrible job getting rid of Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson with Mike Breen, which was phenomenal. And now it's Breen, Richard Jefferson, and Doris Burke. And Doris Burke may now be out after these NBA Finals. But this idea that Mark Jackson or Jeff Van Gundy are going to be coaching the Knicks, I understand it being a conversation point, but it's an irrelevant conversation because it ain't going to happen. So I still think it will be Johnny Bryant. It's not going to be Jay Wright. Everyone got that same text, I guess, that Jay Wright was going to come out and be the coach of the Knicks and come back from college, because I saw that all at the same time, the same wording of the report by four or five or six or seven different reporters. So it's not going to be Jay Wright. I know that some are pushing for Danny Hurley. I think it was Craig Carden who I saw was a Knicks fan. He wants Danny Hurley. I don't think it's going to be Danny Hurley. I don't think the Knicks are going to be interested in Danny Hurley. I think Danny would be interested in the Knicks job. My original guess when this happened was Johnny Bryant. I'll stick with Johnny Bryant, former Knicks assistant. Didn't get the Suns job. Now is the lead assistant with the Cleveland Cavaliers. That's who I think it's going to be. But I do think there is smoke there with them trying to get Jason Kidd. And you've seen some reports as of late that they are not expected to be able to get a deal done for Jason Kidd. But if Jason Kidd is really interested in the Knicks job, which I do think he is, and I could see why. If they didn't get Cooper Flagg, I really think that Kidd would go on out there and push for this Knicks job. He still could, but the way that we look at the Mavericks now is a little bit differently than we did 2 months ago. 2 months ago, it was, oh, you got to work with Nico Harrison. 2 months ago, it was, oh, you got rid of Luka Doncic. Now, I'm not still saying that if I'm Jason Kidd, I would still want to be the coach of the Mavericks, but you do have now the number one overall pick coming in, Cooper Flagg. When Kyrie comes back, you got Kyrie and you got Anthony Davis. It's not the worst situation to be in, but I can understand the appeal on why Kidd could be interested in the New York Knicks job. So if it's not Johnny Bryant, then I think they get a deal done for Jason Kidd. I know Finch, the coach of the Timberwolves, there's been some talk about him, but ultimately I do believe that Johnny Bryant is not maybe the best hire, but I think it's a good fit from them. He knows enough of the guys on the team because he was an assistant for a bunch of years. And also he fits what the mold is kind of now of being a coach in the year of 2025 in the NBA. So just wanted to comment on that. Mark Boyle, who just joined us a few moments ago, the voice of the Pacers, he had a cat in the background during the interview that kept on meowing. Now, Stu, you have two cats?
That is now three cats.
You got another cat?
We got another cat like 3 weeks ago, month ago.
You got
ago.
Another putty cat? How old is, do you have any idea how old the first two cats are?
Yes, one is 9, the other one is 3, and this one is 1.
9, 3, and 1?
Yes.
So you have three cat children, pretty much.
Yes, basically.
Oh my goodness gracious. They all use the same litter box, or they have individual litter boxes?
All the same one.
All the same? How's the cleaning process of the litter box?
Well, we have it's like a automatic.
Oh.
Yeah,
litter. And then you just have to filter out the where the litter goes?
Clean it every now and then, but it cleans itself pretty much, and just take out the bag underneath and away you go.
How stinky is the removal of the bag kind of process?
It's probably the worst part, but
it's not like you have to go in and scrape out everything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not too
How
bad.
How much does cat food cost?
Get the dollar something a can.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then like the big bag of dry food is like 20, 30 bucks.
Is it expensive to own a cat?
I don't think so.
No, unless it's more expensive
unless you go
than a
to
dog.
The vet. If you go to the vet and something's wrong, then it gets expensive, but they're pretty... I don't know. They're pretty low maintenance.
And cats live pretty damn long, right?
Yeah, they could live to 20.
20?
Yeah.
Jeez. So this one cat could potentially go for another 11 years or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, my, you're impressed by that math, by the way. 9.
Yeah, 11, look at that.
Cat's right to 20. You know, look at me. I'm on like a fourth grade math level. Yeah, I'm a dog guy more than a cat guy. I would never own a cat. But, you know, to each its own. Samter, I can't see you being a cat guy.
Anything more than two cats, you're officially a crazy cat lady or a crazy cat something.
Actually, I could see Samter. You have that Dr. Evil kind of feel to you. What are those, bald kind of cats? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Siamese cat.
Yeah, I could see Samter with the Siamese cat.
Just, sitting in a chair, stroking my mustache.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rubbing the cat and planning the death of the world and overtaking the government. Yeah.
There you go. Let's not get political here, but yes.
No, but, it's just, Dr. Evil Samter.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Do you have a dog?
Oh, yeah.
You have a dog right now?
I have a dog right now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
How? Oh, yeah. No, actually, I did.
Oliver, he's four.
Like, it was a pandemic pup, right?
Yes. So my dog of 12 years passed away during the pandemic, and then we got this one about 8 months later.
Oliver?
Oliver.
It's a good name. What are the cat's names, by the way?
Okay, we have Jack, who is the oldest one. That was its name when it was adopted. Cornelia, which we found.
Cornelia!
Yes.
I like that.
It is based off of a Taylor Swift song. So, you know, she named her off of that.
Stupid and all the stereotypes there, let me tell you.
And then the last one is Kiwi. Again, that was its given name when we got her from the shelter.
Okay.
So, I'm just glad he didn't name him after, like, sports icons or something. You know, we have a guy who worked down the hall who named all of his animals after his favorite athletes. Eli and...
Well, I named my dog Brady.
Oh, well, there
I was also a young kid when I was...
Yeah.
Well, is that a bad thing if you name your dog or your cat after an athlete or something like that?
It's not
like
a kid. It's not a bad thing. It just, it feels, I don't know, it feels odd to me.
Who was that soccer player that you were telling me about earlier?
Lamine Yamal.
Maybe next the next cat, Lamine Yamal. Maybe you go there. That's what I would potentially do. Hey, so the cat interrupted us during the interview. This is why I'm bringing this up.
Oh, yeah.
That's how we got here.
How did we get here?
That's why I'm bringing this up, that there's a method to my madness. I saw there was, I forget who it was, but it was someone with Barstool Sports on a plane recently. And the baby cried the entire flight. And he released a video. You know, you got to eventually stop the kid from crying. And there was multiple videos. One of the videos did 15 million views. Had to go viral. Be on a plane and comment and criticize on a baby crying. So I'm going to ask this question to Stu and Samter. And we may get different answers. But Stu, you're on a plane. Oh. Baby's crying.
Yep.
Give me kind of the thought process.
The thought process is don't fly until the kid is old enough is one.
Oh,
that's my
wow.
thought process. Yes. It's the worst when I'm sitting for 5 hours and there's a screaming kid. It's the worst. The worst. I can't think of anything worse than that experience. Flying to Arizona or California with a crying kid. Thank God for noise-canceling headphones. That's all I could say.
Okay. Now, Samter is a father of one. And the one child that Samter is obviously in charge of is 2.5? 2.5?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Good memory.
Now, Samter, let's just say you and your beautiful bride are on a plane, and Alex, who's adorable, a child, is starting to, I don't know, maybe her ears pop or something. It's a kid, who knows? Kind of take me through the process.
So things change a little bit once you have the kid, but Stu's response
was grumpy Samter 5 years ago.
No, Stu's response was never Samter. I may have been pissed off at the kid.
Samter just thought
it. But never don't take the kid until they're ready to fly. You don't know when a kid's ready to fly. The only way to know if they're ready to fly is to take them on a plane.
Okay.
There's no way to, like, repeat that kind of feeling of their ears potentially popping or being uncomfortable or in a plane. There's no way to know whether they're old enough to fly.
So let me just ask you this. Your baby, let's say, is crying on the plane.
Yes.
You would at least try to do something, though.
100%.
Because if that was me, I would be mortified. I would be sitting there saying,
us too.
The whole plane hates me.
Yes.
Everyone's giving me a dirty look.
100%.
I would pick up the child and maybe, like, if you could get up during the flight, like, bounce the child around, distract the child, and then as a bottle, a pacifier, just to shut the kid up, right?
100%. So there was a flight that I was on with Alex and my wife, and there was a kid, like, three rows behind us who was just screaming the whole flight. And all Susan and I can say to each other was, A, Alex is great. She wasn't crying at all. But B, like, if she
did. 5 minutes later.
Like, lock it up. Like, figure it out.
Time out.
Not like lock it up. But I mean, like, lock, get your junk together.
Up.
Get it together.
You can't say. Tighten it up.
There you go. Yes. That's better.
Organize yourself.
That doesn't sound great.
Get yourself together. I'll lock that kid up. Like, what are you doing?
I just meant, like, lock it up. Like, get yourself under control. Get your kid under control. Like, we don't let Alex watch a lot of videos, but if she's screaming, like, we were at a restaurant last night for Susan's birthday.
Yeah.
And we were out, and Alex was screaming at the restaurant, so we never let her watch videos. We put on Peppa Pig. She was happy, quiet, and that was it. Because, like you, we're mortified.
Does she watch Bluey?
She loves Bluey. She has Bluey cookies that she can paint and color in and then eat them.
My niece loves Bluey.
Yeah, it's fun.
Niece was over last night. Game two of the NBA Finals. And I sit down. First off, my sister's like, lower the volume. And I go, no, this is work. This is what we do. I have to watch. I need to hear Mike Breen. And then my niece goes, Bluey, Bluey, Bluey. I go, Bluey will have to wait another day. All right? Like, there's got to be a little tough love that goes on a little bit in the household. I got game two of the NBA Finals, Zach.
Bad uncle.
Oh, stop. Bad uncle. Wow. Bad uncle. Oh, stop.
You scar the kid. The kid's all...
Please.
You wait 20 years from now, there'll be a little resentment.
Nope.
Here's what you do.
NBA Finals. Mike Breen. Yeah. Mike Breen. Hallie.
Bang.
SGA. You know?
Here's what you do. Get a phone. Get a tablet. That's all you need.
The kid doesn't care about you. It's not my issue.
Just have your sister.
The remote's not leaving my hand.
No. Have your sister, like... bring in her phone or have a tablet or something.
Yeah, I'm sure she
And then she can watch, but he can watch Blue Eve somewhere else.
There's also, she could go in the next room.
Yeah, exactly.
She could go downstairs 100%. In the basement. There's enough TVs. We don't discriminate against TVs. There's tons of TVs. Just Uncle Zach was sitting on the couch. Uncle Zach was watching the NBA Finals, and I didn't care what was going on. So so pretty much, I guess the gist of this video I watch is the person was complaining. And the person was complaining about the child crying on the plane from Barstool because of the fact that the parents weren't doing anything. Now, I don't know. Like, as I said, you can pick the baby up, right? You know, walk up and down the aisle, bounce the baby, blah, blah, blah. At a certain point, though, if the kid doesn't stop crying because maybe the kid's ears popped or their ears are clogged, there's nothing that you could do there.
No, but you can at least maybe bring them to the back of the plane or do something. You're right. There might not be something you can do every time, but... there are ways that you can make it less annoying for your fellow passengers.
Yeah, Ack, let me ask you this, Mr. You know, all for the kids now all of a sudden, you know,
terrible
bad uncle.
That's right.
What happens if you're on a plane and a kid's crying?
I've been there.
Yeah.
Not much you could do.
You just sit there and you
got to take it.
Ack goes, I'll take a Jack with a little Coke.
Yeah, no, you'll be first. But yeah, not much. It's not fun. When I went to the 06 Olympics, I had and that was a plane. We left at 7 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And actually, the plane was delayed 2 or 3 hours. So the idea is you're supposed to sleep on the plane. We had a connection in France we had to make. But there was a kid screaming right behind me. I'm like, this is not going well for us.
Yeah. You probably would. Well, I'm not saying you would do this. But if you had an opportunity to do a little Mad Dog Russo diet there, would you contemplate that?
No.
Little gummy action to put you to sleep? No?
No. Oh. Somebody I went with took Benadryl.
Oh, really?
I can't, you know, I can't do that, though.
My dog, when I was a kid, I remember my parents...
Brady?
Yes. Crazy memory. Would give the dog Benadryl on the flight. Because when she got older, I guess she didn't like flying. So, a little Benadryl to the dog was a trick from the vet. Now, I don't know if that's approved or not in the medical world, but that's what the vet said.
It worked.
So, yeah. All righty. So, it is a Zach Gelb show on the Infinity Sports Network, where Zach has a heart to children. So does Samter. So does Zach. Stu?
No.
Not so much. You know what? If we ever get annoyed at you, I'm going to make you get on the
plane. I'm just going to bring Alex in.
Yes.
We're just going to be screaming back here. He's going to be listening for a caller who curses, and Alex will be screaming and running around.
I was going to say, we're going to give Alex a lot of chocolate ice cream.
Done.
And then not make her sleep, and then we'll just have Stu babysit the kid.
You know the one thing that annoys me more on an airplane than a screaming kid?
What?
Somebody who listens to their tablet or phone without headphones.
Okay, that's obnoxious, and especially on a train, too.
Drives me crazy, because with a kid, you can't control the kid. You can put on damn headphones.
Yeah. What really annoys me is when you get a chatty customer.
Oh, that's annoying.
So a chatty passenger sitting right next to you. Oh, bro, coming back, had the best trip. Unbelievable. I got so messed up. Like, I don't need to hear your life story. I'm only right next to you because you picked the seat next to me, or I picked the seat next to you. I didn't know who was going to be there. I do not need to become best friends with someone on a plane. Now, you say that to Bill Belichick, could be a little bit different, and you end up having a girlfriend who's like 60 years younger than you or whatever it is.
Well, that's my point. I remember in my single
Jordan Hudson was crying on the plane once, too.
Having a cute girl on the plane next to me was never a bad thing when I was single.
Oh, stop. That's never going to lead to anything, though. You've been watching too many videos, if that was the case.
I'll just say that it served me well at some point in the past.
Yes, and then Samter woke up, and they said, sir, you need to get off the plane. You were dreaming too much. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We will get to a news brief next. Maybe some more crying children talk, and also Stu being a hoarder with a cat when we come back after these short messages. Update time. Here he is, the Ackman, Rich Ackerman.
Ack time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Alrighty, let's start it off with the NBA Finals. Game 2 was last night. The Thunder have evened up this series at one game apiece. Another double-digit victory. Their 62nd of the season for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on Oklahoma City and how they keep on just throwing haymakers.
To make it this far into the season, it's going to take supreme level of focus to reach an ultimate goal. And they're a display of that to the highest form. Like, they play a full 48 minutes, and you can't just throw the first punch. You got to try to throw all the punches all night. That's what we did. We threw enough punches tonight to get a W.
And that's the thing. They got knocked out in game one when it looked like they were winning the fight. And this was, now could you get off the mat, and what did you have? And they did what they've done for most of the season, which is deliver a thunderous punch. And now this is at one apiece, and most people are going to go right back on to the whole line of thinking that the Thunder are going to win the NBA Finals once again. Let's go to Chet Holmgren. So, Stu, you miss Alex Caruso, by the way? You miss him?
I do, yes. I was mad when the Lakers got rid of him, for sure.
He had 20 points last night. It was 4 of 8 from 3. Here is Chet Holmgren with a funny response to Alex Caruso's big game.
How would you explain or describe Caruso's energy levels for a 30-year-old man?
Don't disrespect our GOAT like that, man. He's one of those guys who you know is going to bring it every single night, whether he's 22 or 30. It doesn't matter. He's going to bring it.
Their GOAT? Move over LeBron. Move over Michael Jordan. Oh, sorry. Let me redo that. Move over Michael Jordan. LeBron, nope. You're not the next GOAT. It would be Alex Caruso. Ugh. I know, I'm dreading that conversation. Next time we have to have a LeBron-Michael Jordan conversation at 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. My least favorite radio on the planet. LeBron's the best because of this. No, Michael's the best. LeBron's a bum. Ugh. Nails on a chalkboard. Like Mark Boyle's cat in the background of an interview. Just things I don't want to hear. Let's go to Tyrese Haliburton. If Oklahoma City, if their defense was tougher on him this game and go around.
No, I mean, this is who they are defensively. They got a lot of different guys who can guard the ball, fly around. They're really physical, force the officials to, let us play a little bit more. So just got to do a better job playing through there. I think I've had two really poor first halves. So I just got to figure out how to be better earlier in games. Kudos to them. They're a great defensive team. But watch the film, see where I can get better.
And let's hear Miles Turner on Oklahoma City's defense on Tyrese Haliburton. Here's the Pacers star.
Yeah, it's a battle. I think that, screening is just, there's an art to it. You know what I mean? You have to be able to, set the guy up. Someone like Dort or Caruso, they fight over screens well. So it's just a matter of timing it, a matter of being on the same page. There's off-ball actions, there's flares, there's plenty of stuff you can do, to get him going. But again, I don't think we did a good enough job executing on it.
And here's the thing. I look at what the Pacers did. Game 2 was enormous for the Thunder because if they would have been down 0-2, could they come back? I guess it's possible, but I don't think you're coming back from down 0-2 even when you're the Oklahoma City Thunder and you're in the making of becoming one of the great teams that we've ever seen in the NBA or on that list or at least in that conversation. But when you go down 2-0 and you would have dropped both of those two at home, I think that's not impossible, but very, very difficult to come on back from. Because once again, I would have thought the Pacers would have won one on their home court in games 3 or 4, and then you're up 3-1. And unless if you're LeBron up against the Golden State Warriors, you're probably not coming back from 3-1. So the Thunder not only delivered a statement win last night, and they tie the series up at one apiece, but it goes from, oh, wow, the Pacers did it again. Maybe the Pacers are more alive than what we thought to, oh, my goodness gracious, now the Thunder, with what we saw in Game 2, they're going to get the job done. But I even said this to Mark Boyle, and I'll say it again. I thought the Pacers did their job. You need to get one of these victories. You got the first. You didn't get the second. Yeah, it would have been nice if you could have got the second like you did up against the Knicks or like you did up against the Cavs, but that's not the way that the cookie did crumble. So let's hear from Pascal Siakam. One of the more underrated players in the league. Are they happy with the road split up against OKC?
I don't think it's consolation. I mean, I think you want to win every game you play. Not happy with how the game went today. That said, we just got to turn the page, focus on game 3. that's the biggest game of the year. Just ready to compete, play hard. Yeah, so that's our focus. You know, we gotta, as hard as this one is, we just gotta move on to the next.
And what is he gonna say? Yeah, we tried to lose tonight. Obviously not. You want to win every game, but it's not realistic. Be like me saying, yeah, I want to go on every date with Beyonce. I couldn't even get on one date with Beyonce, let alone every date being with Beyonce. Let's go to Stephen A. Smith, was on First Take on the ESPN. Stephen A. Smith throws a new name, just like Shep has thrown this name out there in the Knicks head coaching search.
I'm going to always mention the name Mark Jackson because always. He's been away from the game for a decade as a coach. This man was responsible for building Golden State before Steve Kerr was brought in and took over and piggybacked off of that. But Mark Jackson starred at Bishop Lockland. Mark Jackson starred at St. John's University. Mark Jackson was a rookie of the year playing for the New York Knicks. Mark Jackson was a preeminent voice on the NBA, and he knows and feels and vibes with New York. He's a native. So a voice for the New York Knicks where we ain't got to worry about hearing from James Dolan, who hides from us, or Leon Rose, the president, who hides from us, got APBs out for their ass. We ain't got to worry about somebody like that because you got somebody like Mark Jackson. But I understand that I doubt that will happen.
It's not going to happen. So why are we talking about it? Now, there's a difference in saying I want him to be the coach and then he has a chance to be the coach. There's a lot of guys that I would like to be a coach. They have a chance to be a coach. Mark Jackson hasn't coached in 2014. It's not because Mark Jackson doesn't want to coach, because the league's not interested in Mark Jackson for whatever the reasons are. Let's go to Ja'Marr Chase. He was on SI Right Now, and he was asked about his Mount Rushmore of wide receivers.
Let me get your receiver Mount Rushmore real quick. All time, top four receivers.
I'm going to do Calvin Johnson. I got to get Antonio Brown in there. Got to throw a cup in there with Triple Crown. And Jerry Rice, of course.
No Randy Moss or T.O.?
I'm not knocking them. You know what I'm saying? I'd have Ocho in there, too, if I could. You know what I'm saying? That's only four.
Yeah, I understand this is basically when you ask a player this, it's how old the player is and if they've done their research or not. You can't have Antonio Brown and Cooper Kupp on your Mount Rushmore of wide receivers. Just a yes or no, because I think these three names are easy. Jerry Rice, obviously Mount Rushmore of wide receivers. Stu?
Yes.
Samter?
Of course.
That's the GOAT, number one. Randy Moss, Mount Rushmore of wide receivers.
Yes.
Of course.
Okay, that's easy too. Terrell Owens, T.O., Mount Rushmore of wide receivers.
I'd put him up there, yeah.
I would, but he would probably be closer to the fourth slot than the third slot.
Okay, so then who's your other guy?
Oh, man, I'd probably go...
Because just for me, yeah. Mine is Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, T.O., that's spot one, two, three.
I agree with you. I think T.O. is probably the third best, but when I'm thinking of Mount Rushmore, it's not just about best. It's about... all-encompassing what they mean for the game and all these. So for me, maybe Megatron, maybe Steve Largent, maybe Larry Fitzgerald, but T.O. would definitely be on the Mount Rushmore.
So he's on there.
He's
so
then, definitely on there.
So then who's your other guy, whether you want to say it's third or fourth, where would you go? Because that's, to me, one, two, and three, I think most people, right, Tom, Dick, and Harry will be like, oh, it's Randy Moss, it's Jerry Rice, it's T.O., not in that order, but those would be the three names that would end up being on the Mount Rushmore, and then you have one spot left. That's to me when the conversation starts.
Yeah, I guess for Mount Rushmore, I will go with Steve Largent just because he was so good in an era where receivers weren't doing this, and he held every single receiver record until he retired.
Stu, who would be your fourth?
I will not be a homer. I will not pick Tim Brown, even though I want to pick Tim Brown.
Oh, Tim Brown, a great receiver, but fourth best wide receiver of all time. Come on.
I would go Calvin Johnson here.
Okay. So I thought about Calvin Johnson. That was the first name I scribbled down. I also did scribble down at one point Steve Largent. I was going through it. And I know I'm going to sound very old here, and I'm the youngest on the show. Let me just remind everybody that. And I was never even a thought when this guy was playing. And I never obviously remember him ever being alive, even though he lived 3 years while I was still alive. And that's Don Hutson. Now, people are going to sit there and be like, oh, come on, blah, blah, blah. Like, why are we going back to an era of 1935 to 1945? But he had three NFL championships, two-time most valuable player. He led the league in receptions 8 times in his career. And he also led the league in touchdowns, NFL receiving touchdowns 9 times. And he led the NFL in scoring 5 times. Now, forget about what he did on the other side of the ball. This is just receiving-wise. Here's what did it for me. In 1942, in 11 games, He had 74 receptions for 1,211 yards and 17 receiving touchdowns. I wasn't going to go with an older name, like a really, really older name. But when I saw that stat line, I said to myself, okay, that's what puts him on the Mount Rushmore. So those would be my four. Let's hear the game winner. This was in double overtime on Friday night. This is the Panthers Radio Network, Brad Marchand. Just ridiculous that he's on the Florida Panthers. How they got him is just crazy. But this was the double overtime winner.
We're in the zone. It's Marchand. Pass ahead. We're going to Marchand. A breakaway. Heads in Marchand. Can he tie the series? And he scores! Brad Marchand in overtime. And the Panthers win game 2-5-4. The series is tied and a game apiece.
And all tied up, as you just started, a game of peace. Let's hear from Brad Marchand on the game-winning goal.
You know, it's incredibly proud of these moments. These are memories that you have, you know, the rest of your life, not just for yourself, but your whole family. And we're all enjoying the journey right now.
And you got game 3 coming up tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern time as this series goes to Florida. The Florida Panthers are the money line favorites at minus 145. The Oilers are an underdog plus money at plus 125. I would not surprise me if this series goes to 2 apiece because of how close these teams are. But I do think the Panthers win tonight, and I'm still going with the Panthers winning this series. I thought that was a missed opportunity for the Edmonton Oilers. You know, I know you have McDavid. I know you got Dreisaitl. Skinner's been playing better this year. And you don't have Zach Hyman, but you got the home ice advantage in this series. You're going up against the best team in hockey, a team that won the Stanley Cup a year ago that beat you in 7 games. I thought the Oilers, if they wanted to really impress me, it wasn't just winning game 1, which we know that they did, and it was in overtime and they did that, but I even said this going in on the show on Friday, they got to win game 2. Really impressed me, really made me think you could win this series by winning game 2. They didn't do that, so I'm still on the Panthers train until the Oilers take them out. It is Zach Gelb Show right here on the Infinity Sports Network, Onside Offside, next.